Welcome to the Press On Podcast. In this episode, we'll hear from Celia Sage on I've Already Read the Bible.
I enjoyed a really great conversation recently. One of those dear friends who think deeply about faith and small t truth, and who seek to practice love every day. We were talking, not necessarily about doing the readings, but about whether we pick up our Bibles on a regular basis or not, and why we do or don't make it a practice. And it reminded me of an exchange between my parents many years ago, which has stuck with me ever since. Most of my early memories of my father were of his engagement with the Bible. He read, studied, spoke about it, taught at Bible school, wrote for Christadelphian magazines, corresponded with others about it, quoted it. He could hold his own in a sword fight with the best. The dog-eared, marked-up Bible next to his chair was just one of many in our home. But by his middle years, he seemed to be dropping out of faith altogether. One day my mother asked him in anguish, "Why don't you read your Bible anymore?" His reply, "I've already read it." If my father ever picked up his Bible again, we never saw any evidence of it. Although there was evidence that he probably did not, I can't nor will I ever presume to judge his standing before God. But that "I've already read it" still haunts me. Doing the readings, or reading the Bible. Now, I want to emphasize that none of the friends I was talking to said they hadn't been reading their Bible because they'd already read it. Still, our conversation reminded me that sooner or later, many, if not most believers, feel like we're coming up empty when we open our Bibles, like there's nothing further to learn or gain from it. We're not finding the answers we seek. This may be especially true of those who've eaten, slept, and breathed the Bible for many years. I've already read it. I have the information. And it's not helping anymore. So we set it aside, or it just kind of falls out of our lives. It happens in so many ways, like caring for small children, or parents, or just active family life. Long hours, making a living, or serving others. Mornings don't work. Evenings, you're too tired. And it's an insult to God if you fall asleep while reading. You give yourself credit for extra Bible time on Sundays and take the rest of the week off. The Bible seems outdated, like it has nothing to say about the actual issues pressing on you. It's boring. It's biased. Sometimes even barbaric. Your spiritual time is better spent meditating or walking in nature. Like my father, I've already read the Bible. Not nearly so faithfully as many others have, but still, many times over, 60 years worth at this point. My parents gave me my first real Bible when I was in first grade. And yes, I took it to show and tell. But as decades passed, the novelty faded, and I would often just skim without the words sinking in. I've probably never read a genealogy all the way through. I still haven't found the perfect reading plan. So I've stumbled along, dipping inconsistently into what I'd been raised to believe were the very words of God speaking to me, and not really listening. So after the honest, open conversation with my friends, I had to ask myself, why am I still reading the Bible? Why am I still reading the Bible? All I can offer is my own why at this moment. Mirror, therapist, coach. I'm reading it because I am a happier person when I do, and I pray a better one. My husband Peter may beg to differ some days, unless he thinks about what I'm like before I sit down with my Bible. Before I sit down, I'm hungover with the night's dreams, mistrustful, and fretting about the coming day. I'm already lining up reasons why things will go wrong and whose fault they will be. After half an hour with a coffee, the dog on my lap, and my Bible, I am calmer, more positive. I can feel the change in my attitude and my ability to take on what I can during the day and give the rest to God. I'm no icon of serenity. Peter may not even see a difference, but I'm miles from the person I was at 3 a.m., trying to control the world in my hubris and fear. Admitting that the coffee, the dog, and a nice view out the window don't hurt, how does this daily dose of Bible have such a reliable effect on me? Well, it does for me what a physiotherapist does for someone recovering from injury, what a voice coach does for a singer, what a coach does for an athlete, or an editor for a writer, what a ballet teacher does for a dancer, or a life drawing class for an artist, what peer review does for a scientist. It holds up a mirror. It takes an objective view of me and shows me what I need to correct and what I need to keep doing to be the person I want to be. Like the person in James 1 who looks into a mirror, that perfect law of liberty, so they can be a doer and not just a hearer of the word. I worked for a few years as a piano accompanist at a professional ballet school and played for the daily bar class. That's B-A-R-R-E. Every day, from the toddlers in recreational class to the young adults preparing to audition with a professional ballet company, every dancer works through a set of movements designed to strengthen, tone, and in effect sculpt their body to one goal, technically flawless, expressive performance in the tradition of classical ballet. And during the class, every dancer is under the eagle-eyed scrutiny of the teacher, who helps them correct the tiny misalignments they can't see, or who encourages them in improvements they're not yet aware of. No matter how perfect their body is for ballet, or how hard they work, no matter how well they know ballet history and tradition, nor how developed their musicality and sense of rhythm, the dancer cannot develop properly without that outside view that the teacher has and the wall of mirrors in front of which they practice. Often, a dancer would feel quite certain their arms were placed correctly, and only after many corrections before the mirror, guided by the teacher, realize that what they felt was misleading them and be able to shape the movement they were striving for. I remember being so surprised one day when a visiting ballet mistress with a renowned international performance career walked in and went to the bar with the students. I later learned that no matter where she was, she still took class every day, still open to learning, improvement, and to the discipline of daily practice. In all of the disciplines I mentioned, and many others, even those, especially those, at the top of their field, know they cannot maintain their skill, let alone keep improving, without an outside perspective. They know they need someone with an objective view to suggest a leg adjustment to a dancer, point out a writer's awkward phrase, or a logical gap in a scientist's paper, to see what that person cannot see for themselves, what is working well, and what is working against them in attaining their goals, and to suggest, even urge, corrections with compassion and insight. The objective view, larger perspective, compassion, insight. The Bible offers all of these in its pages. When I wake in the morning with my small, fearful perspective and open my Bible app, the words I find push back at me like the two-edged sword, piercing and discerning my heart. I pray to be led by the word, but wincing as I do, because I know I must open myself to discomfort and change, to push the muscles of my mind and heart past their comfort zone, to be prepared to live in uncertainty, that in between, that now and not yet, as N.T. Wright puts it, otherwise known as faith. I have to practice, stretch, reach, continually leaving behind the way I thought, spoke, acted yesterday, and in each day knowing I still have more to do tomorrow. My Bible can coach me along that path if I trust the process. My Bible coach may gently reveal my error and retrain my heart through the poetry of Psalms and Proverbs, or correct more forcefully through Old Testament narrative, whose subjects, Abraham, Job, David, encounter trials like my own. It may correct my self-led thinking through the logic of Paul's letters, upend and shift my whole worldview through Jesus' teaching, or through prophetic vision, open a perspective so vast and beautiful that my grievances and desires dissolve before it. Just words or Word of God? But sometimes you hear, the Bible is just a book. Shouldn't Jesus be my guide and the Spirit of God my director? It always gives me pause when someone says they're really not interested in the Bible, but they follow only Jesus. Isn't the Bible how we even know of the existence of Jesus, let alone his teaching? Not only that, the scriptures he knew from childhood shaped his thinking. Even the Son of God looked to these writings for wisdom and guidance, even as a boy when he stayed behind in the temple. We seek the mind of Christ. It's through this collection of writings, as well as his divine parentage, of course, that the mind of Christ developed. If we truly follow Jesus, we might consider adopting the life coach he chose, the very words of his Father and ours. Of course, I hope it's understood that I'm speaking of the Bible as one of the modes through which the Creator makes himself known, just as he does through the life, death, and resurrection of his Son, and through the workings of his Spirit in the world and in our lives. These do not operate separately. They are all God working his will. Aren't there other perfectly good books to read which can help me in my life and even my walk with God? Absolutely. I'll take just about any Shakespeare play. But there's Marcus Aurelius, Rachel Hild Evans, or our own Dennis Gillette. How about The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse? Or The Little Prince? Even Louise Penny's Inspector Gamache expounds four statements that lead to wisdom. I was wrong, I'm sorry, I don't know, and I need help. In fact, I regularly follow my Bible reading with another spiritually related reading. Most recently, it's been Marilynne Robinson's Reading Genesis, for instance. But the Bible stands above the rest, staking its claim as the Word of God, a mode of God's work in concert with his Son and his Spirit. And there is no question its wisdom is more ancient than these other books, having roots before writing and reading existed. Its wisdom was time-tested thousands of years before today's creeds and cultures existed. To me, that's credibility. Also, even though the Bible is a collection of writings inspired at sundry times and in diverse manners, through people in contact with many cultures, Sumerian, Egyptian, Grecian, Canaanite, Phoenician, Roman, to name a few, its themes are unified and tell one story. And the Bible tells the same tale as the created world, also an utterance of God, continually renewing the same themes and a beauty and a mysteries. Creation speaks in its way. Jesus' life speaks. The Bible speaks. We are language-using beings whose very thoughts are formed in language. It would be very strange if the one who made us did not use language in communicating what he wants us to know about himself and his intentions. The Bible makes this claim, and it is reasonable. We can theorize all we want about what the Creator intends, but we must listen when he speaks. God is not a God of confusion. God's message is unified, or he is not God. So the question perhaps should not be, does God reach out to me through the Bible, or Jesus, or creation, or his work through history, or through my own experience? Rather, I believe the Almighty reaches out through the Bible and Jesus and creation, history, and the outworking of my own experience. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, and know my thoughts. As beings created in the image of God, our degree of consciousness, our awareness of our own thought and feelings, seems to be what sets humans apart from other forms of life, as far as we can tell. But to not go beyond self-awareness is to deny growth and life. Many of us know what it's like to be too in our own head, and the threat that could pose to mental health. What drags us out of that self-vortex is an outside perspective, whether through wise counsel or prescribed therapies. He who made us knows us better than ourselves, and his word holds a vision before us that is deeper and more glorious than we can imagine on our own. As we adopt that vision as our own, the Bible is our mirror, our coach. It sees us as we cannot see ourselves and knows who we are and what we may become. It is truly profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, and for training in righteousness, as it offers compassionate insight into our condition, firm correction when necessary, always comfort and hope. I recently read an article about Canada's 2024 Olympians. The athletes choose a coach based on the coach's experience, their deep knowledge of their sport, and their alignment with the athlete's goals. The athlete makes the choice to submit to the advice, correction, and encouragement of the coach. Each athlete needs to trust someone who can see them more clearly than they can see themselves, and invite that coach into their lives. There is a coach for each of us as well, who makes his wisdom and love known through the created world, through the person of his begotten Son, through his Spirit working his will, and through the writings we call the Bible. The Almighty will coach, train, correct, comfort, and inspire us if we ask him to. Louder than words. So I mentioned my father's Bible on the table beside his chair. I don't know where it went after he declared he had already read the Bible, but I didn't mention my mother's and my paternal grandmother's Bible, which remained to the end of each of their lives either on their tables beside their chairs or on their laps, as much a part of their lives and daily routines as their toothbrushes. Which makes me wonder, in a quick sidebar before I conclude, did my children and do my grandchildren see the Bible as that important in my life? The whole point of these words is to share how daily reading of the Bible benefits me. But I wonder if Silas or Sonny, Ida or Lenny were to sneak up and peer in at me through the sunroom door some morning around 8, would they know exactly what I was doing, as I did when I'd see my grandmother through her picture window, settled in her easy chair, Bible in her lap? Or would my grandkids just see Gran with her iPhone and assume I was checking emails or scrolling the news? In fact, I would be reading my Bible on my phone. I like the convenience at that time of day and the fresh perspective found in a version I'm not used to. But am I sending the same message my grandmother and mother sent me? Kids are more perceptive than we think, and I'd like to believe that they'd sense what I was up to. But I've started leaving my old analog Bible out somewhere where they can see it anyway. I've already read the Bible. Yes, and I've already drunk water. I've already had a meal. I've already hugged my children and grandchildren. I've already told my spouse I love him. I've already taken a breath. The comfort and correction of the Bible is there to be collected daily, like manna in the wilderness, or, for me, like medicine, like therapy. Not surgery, where you might see immediate change, but the kind of daily application and exercise where improvement is best seen in hindsight. I used to try to knuckle down on Bible reading, trying to wring some full, concrete meaning out of it each morning, but learned that, for me anyway, trying to force its wisdom into my mind and heart was like trying to fill a bottle with a fire hose. While, of course, there's a time for intense, focused study, in recent years, I've taken a more receptive approach to daily reading, letting the thoughts and ideas kind of drop into my mind and heart like rain, softening and nourishing where they will. It's more pleasure than duty now, and new insights just seem to spring up from the page in front of me every day, through no effort of my own. I want to make it very clear again that far from tut-tutting my dear friends who opened up about their uneven engagement with the Bible, I want to thank them for opening the same question in my own mind. Why have I settled into a daily practice of reading in the Bible? And it is a practice. That accomplished ballet dancer has already gone through the formalized movements of class nearly as many times as there have been days in her life. And the movement and discipline have become part of her, always the same, yet always new as her spirit and body change with time. I am still not a morning person, yet, like the dancer, every morning I am new, different from the day before. I have had new experiences, new memories, new gifts, and new challenges. Speaking personally, every day's new, fearful, irritable morning me needs to be settled and calmed and prepared to serve God all over again. I find this in my time with the Bible. Even if I just read a little bit, even if my mind wanders, even if I carry away just one idea from the reading, these writings offer more than a lifetime of treasures, but right now, this is why I still read the Bible, even though I've already read the Bible.
Thanks for joining us on the Press On podcast. You've been listening to Celia Sage. For more, you can visit pressonjournal.org.